This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it has been, ow, my hair got caught in the seatbelt. It's getting long enough to do that, but it's not quite long enough to actually pull back yet. So once it gets long enough to catch behind me at the base of my neck, life gets good. At this point, I can catch it, my hair sort of up the top of my head and have like a samurai hairdo, but I haven't actually done that yet. Probably another, I don't know, 6 months or so, and I'll be able to catch it down at the base of my neck. Then life is good. It is episode 185 today. It's been a good week at work. Got several things accomplished. Didn't really have too much excitement. One of the guys who supports one of the system, big systems that I built is actually on vacation. So I've been fielding a few requests there for information and for support, but that's all been going fine. And I got several projects that are all bubbling to the surface at the same time, but they all seem to be going fine. So it's good. Everything's good. I am a little blitzed today because the current project I'm working on, the tools are not operating in the most optimal way they could operate. And so, you know, that's put more responsibility back on me in terms of being very careful and having to wait longer between iterations of checking things. But you know what? It's going to be fine. We'll get her all done. What else? I'm working on calling Grumpy Old Prophets Part 1, getting that put to production. I have just a little extra scene now. I've added a couple of other extra little scenes, and I have one more little extra scene that I need to add. I may get that added tonight. I have to do a read-through tomorrow, a careful read-through. Then I have to actually dump it into InDesign and get it formatted. I had thought about possibly doing a more sophisticated layout on it and actually doing it the right way being you don't have page numbers on individual chapter head pages, you don't actually start numbering pages until you get to a certain place, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Most of the people out there have no idea that that's what you do. So, having ascribed to the principle of passable mediocrity, I would be inclined not to worry about that, especially given the deadlines that I have. I really am trying to get these books put out in about 2 weeks in terms of getting them ready for production, because if I can do that, then I'll be ready for the last one as the deadline for input for the last one comes to a close, and then I should be able to have them all available for production by like December 1st, which would be good. That would be good. So, question is, do you put the stuff out with passable mediocrity and get on to writing the next thing? Or do you try to tweak and tweak and tweak for things that only a few people will actually appreciate? And frankly, I am inclined to just say only a few people will actually appreciate that. So there you go. Anyways, so I intend to just achieve the level of passable mediocrity when it comes to the layout of the book. This is going to be a little freewheeling today. I have been busy with other things, but I had some other news items that I could talk about and things that I could share, but today I decided this would just be a little freewheeling because I found out this week that I lost one. And when I say I lost one, I mean that someone whom I poured my life into and shared my life with several years ago committed suicide at the beginning of this week. I got the news, I think on Monday night. I believe it was Monday night. His wife called and said that he had committed suicide. So, you know, obviously, if we want to just wrap this up just really quickly in a few words, as my son-in-law said when we were talking about it and he knew of the situation, he said, well, he said, that is the ultimate end that the flesh has in mind for all of us. And I said, yeah, you're absolutely right. That really is the goal of the flesh, destruction. And my daughter said, and it's amazing how much destruction a suicide leaves in its wake. I said, absolutely. She said, it's just everywhere. And it's true. Destruction is everywhere. But I wanted to talk about suicide a little bit today because there are some places that we quickly run to in our minds as we contemplate someone who has committed suicide. And I wanted to address those things just from what I think I know about life at this point. Just to give you a bit of context, I met my friend many years ago when he started coming to Praise Assembly and I was the music minister there. After services, I was always on the prowl for new choir members. And I had developed a skill or an intuition, or call it what you will. But I was more often right than I was wrong. And what I would do is, after service wrapped up, I would move out into the foyer where people were talking and walking through, and I would greet people, and I would just watch, strike up a conversation with people, ask them how they were doing, you know, shake hands, do that whole thing to show yourself friendly. And then I would look them in the eye and I would say, do you sing? And I would watch their reaction. Because typically, I would only ask that question of singers. There is a quality to someone who can express themselves in music that I was able to discern just by looking at them and listening to them for a few minutes. And I believe that's how I met my friend. He was there, he had started coming to Praise Assembly, and at one point I struck up a conversation with him and I asked him, do you sing? And as it turns out, he did sing, and he actually had sung in some classical choirs and things, and so he did have some skills when it came to music. And as I grew to know my friend better and spent more time with him, he did subsequently join choir. I found him to be a fascinatingly intelligent man. And I told him at one point, I said, I enjoy talking to you because your intelligence amuses me. I think it's just so fun. He had had some fairly significant trials in his life. He had married the love of his life was on par to go to an Ivy League college, study business, had decided to follow someone here. I can't remember. It wasn't his wife, but they had decided there was a minister or somebody that they wanted to follow, and so they ended up moving, I think, to Springfield, and I can't remember where he went to college instead of going to the Ivy League schools, but it was not an Ivy League school. His family was disappointed about that. But he had found and married the love of his life, and so that was all fine. She subsequently died. He got remarried, I think, somewhat quickly, and quickly found himself in a less than desirable situation. In the midst of all that, became disillusioned, I think, with God, and ended up doing something very stupid. Stupid enough that at any time when I knew him, there could have been a phone call and he could have gone to jail for many years. And part in that whole transition, there came a point where he really needed a place to stay. And so we opened our home to him, and he actually lived with us for, I think, 5 months, something like that. My wife would know better. And during that time, from time to time, we would sit around the kitchen table and we would talk. We would talk about the things of the Lord. And my friend knew those things, understood those things very quickly, you know, could articulate the difference between flesh and spirit, understood it, understood the whole idea, had no trouble catching on to the model, the framework. During that time, we had another single woman in our, another single person in our choir, who was a fascinating person as well. And she asked me at one point, had been through a difficult divorce as well. She asked me at one point if I could work on a computer for her, if I knew anything about building a computer. And I normally handed those requests off to another young man who took care of them. But as I was answering the email, I felt very clearly that I should say, well, my friend might be able to help you with that. And so I was really instrumental in introducing the two of them. What followed was a fairly tempestuous courtship. Oh, man. I mean, there was a rocky road. His ex-wife actually brought a lot of pressure to bear on the situation. There was incidents, including an incident where my friend actually tried to commit suicide at one point. And the woman from the choir who was he was courting and dating, she arranged an intervention, and the police came, and he was taken to one of the psych wards and put under observation for several days. And his wife, when I was talking to him on Tuesday, called him a tortured soul, and he certainly was. But he was very intelligent. Finally, after ups and downs and ons and offs, finally they got married. And I picked a point after they got married, once they had made the decision, to relate the story of what I had done to introduce them, how I had purposefully suggested him so that they could meet, when it was my practice to suggest someone else in those situations. And then I looked them both in the eye and said, I'm telling you this because I feel you need to know it. I'm not sure what lies ahead for the both of you, but I will tell you that there is no question that I felt that I should introduce the two of you to each other. I said, I do not normally play matchmaker, but I really felt in this case that the two of you needed to meet. But I wasn't going to tell you that until you all worked it out yourself and decided to get married. And they did. After that point, I sort of lost track of them. They lived on the south end of town. We got together occasionally. Everything sort of seemed to be fine. My friend was leaning more and more towards moving into some sort of ministerial role. He wanted to help people. He ended up working with the recovery program at Praise Assembly. And apparently, we heard of this several months ago, that put him in close proximity to a woman who had some psychological problems. And one thing led to another, and there was an affair. I heard about it after the fact, was very saddened by it, and I waited. Because you can't really help someone until they're ready to be helped. And I had spent enough time with my friend that he should have been aware, absolutely, that I loved him no matter what. But he never called. I then learned that our new renters, in fact, he was friends with my friend. And I would keep tabs on it that way. I would say, how's so-and-so doing? And he'd say, well, he seems to be doing better. He said, it's interesting, when we first got to know each other, he kind of mentored me, and he said, now that this has happened, I'm sort of mentoring him. And he said he's actually back together with his wife, and they're working things out, and they've moved into his mom's house, which is just 5 minutes from me. And I said, oh, cool. I said, you know, say hello for me. Have him give me a call. And I will honestly tell you that over the last several weeks, he has come to my mind multiple times. And I did not act on it. Perhaps I should have. I don't know. I did tell his wife that he had come to my mind several times. It appeared that they were trying to work out their marriage and get things back together. Unfortunately, it also appeared that he was secretly still communicating with the woman he had the affair with. And I think all of that finally just wore on him so much that he just gave up. And so I believe it was Sunday morning. He went to a house and closed up the garage, started the car, leaned his seat back, and waited until the carbon monoxide overtook him. In the wake of that, his wife now has to deal with all of the funeral arrangements. She has to deal with all of the disposal of his things. She has to deal with the loss of a husband. She has to deal with the fact that the last conversation she had with him, she was extremely angry because she had just found out that he was still seeing this other woman. She has to deal with the fact that her son, which was my friend's stepson, was devastated as well. Friends all around my friends have been devastated as well. Destruction, far and wide destruction. Because that is the goal of the flesh. And that is what it has accomplished in this case. But having said all that, then, I'm getting my mail. The question really comes down, after all of that is done, to could all of us have done something different? And the answer is, perhaps we could. But at the end of the day, one of the core principles I have about life is free will. My friend had enough knowledge. He had enough knowledge that if he had acted on the knowledge that he had, he could have lived a full and rich life for many years to come. But he chose to listen to his flesh. He chose to let it convince him. I'm backing into my garage. He chose to let it convince him that he could never change, that all he was doing was bringing pain and suffering to those around him, that he had disappointed everyone around him. I'm sure these are the tracks that the flesh had taken. That he had disappointed everybody around him and he wasn't worth anything, and why shouldn't he just kill himself and end it all? He chose to allow his flesh to put him in an extraordinary amount of pain and to convince him that the only way out of that pain was to kill himself. It does remind me of the parable of the man who built his house on the rock and the man who built his house on the sand. Because as I've said before on these podcasts, one of the things that we miss in that parable is that Jesus is not saying if you just have knowledge, you'll be like someone who builds your house on the rock. Jesus says, if you hear my sayings and put them into practice. So you have to know it and you have to do it. You have to act. You have to stand against the flesh and say, you are lying and I am not listening to you. Because when I look at my friend's life, there was much he knew and there was some he acted on. But there was a very crucial component that he did not act on. He simply had the knowledge of it. And in the end, when the storms came and the wind came, his life came crashing down. And that's sad. But it is not condemning. It is not unforgivable. And that's the second thing that I want to bring out today in this. It's already been mentioned. Well, do you think your friend went to heaven? And my response is yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I know we don't like it. I know we don't like to say that because then we get nervous. Well, then people will just be committing suicide all over the place. No, they won't. No, they won't. And the reason that I come to that conclusion is all the books I've been writing in the Grumpy Old Prophet series, I just keep coming back in those, keep being led back to it, keep exploring this idea of God's love for us. The depths of God's love for us. And the truth of what Paul said when he said that God was in Christ Jesus reconciling the world to himself and he no longer counts men's sins against them. My son-in-law jokingly said after he read the book 3 of Grumpy Old Prophets, which is actually part 4, which is on the Easter story. He said, jokingly, so it sounds like you're a universalist now. And I said, no, I'm not a universalist because I believe in free will. if someone stiff arms God absolutely and says, I don't want any part of you, and just keeps doing it, God will say, okay. But I do know this about my friend. He loved Jesus. He was tangled up and twisted up inside, and he was a tortured soul from his own choosing. But at the base of it, he loved Jesus. And so I am absolutely confident that as the carbon monoxide replaced the oxygen in his lungs, and he sputtered and coughed and drifted off and died, that Jesus was there to welcome him and to take him to heaven. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.